This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H time. Let's get to work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. 1 week away from the draft. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. this morning. I am Sean Pendergast. He is Seth Payne. Seth's laughing already. Did I mess up on something?
No. You didn't mess up anything at all. I'm just laughing at my own. You know how I am administratively. I have issues. I don't allow myself to get overly frustrated with other people's administrative issues.
Mm-hmm.
I got a wham doozy of a issue that Ben and I are working through right now.
Oh, really?
And it's blowing my mind.
Okay.
Blowing my mind.
Is it anything that is about to affect the show?
No, okay. Other than that, I got to try to compartmentalize. It's one of those things where yesterday Ben and I had to do something immediately.
Yeah.
Immediately, you have to get this done.
Right.
And I protested a little bit. I'm like, I don't think this is accurate. And they're like, no, it's accurate. Get it done. And now this morning, it's like, no, we were wrong yesterday. You need to do this immediately.
Yeah.
But it's three times as much as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm going to set it aside and think about the Astros and their inability to field.
Yeah, that should cure things just fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. See, normally after an Astros game, we would bump in with a highlight from the game, even just the final call. But that, like, there was like yet another afternoon getaway day, businessman special. I got to go look and see if I'm accurate on this. There's a 50% chance that I am because the Astros win one, lose one, win one, lose one, win one, lose one all the time. And I feel like they played like six games each week. They've had an off day each week so far. It feels that way. And it just feels like 3 weeks into the season, I have wasted many an afternoon watching this baseball team.
Well, the problem is, or you know what? I'm going to count my blessings instead of my curses, Sean.
Okay.
For one, I'm happy that Ben and I have a purpose this morning.
Yeah.
As we wade through this mess.
I would love to be part of that. I feel so left out of this kerfuffle that you've got going on.
The other thing is, though, that by and large, if you miss an Astros game these days, you really only have to go back and watch one, maybe two innings.
Yeah.
Because the Astros aren't scoring.
Right.
They're certainly not scoring.
Yeah.
They scored three or fewer runs in a god-awful number of
13 of their 18 games, they've scored three or fewer runs.
It's pretty damn impressive. Yesterday it was the bottom of the fifth, I believe, right?
When St. Louis did their damage is what you're talking about.
Yeah, and they do all their damage, and if for some reason you couldn't watch the game, you can just go back and watch
That's
the bottom
true.
Of the fifth inning,
That's
and there
true.
You go. It's just been... It's been a very frustrating beginning of the season. I feel, as I count my blessings instead of my curses, though, at least it's not as bad as last year.
No, it's not. Yeah, the pitching's good at least.
You know what I didn't like yesterday? When if you go back and watch the only important half inning of the game, other than Pena's hit early on,
yeah,
that the I think it was right before the Donovan hit.
Mm-hmm.
That he mentioned that the Callis mentions that Donovan has the most hits in the league, but tied for second are Bregman and Tucker.
Yeah,
that was when I just go ahead and violate me with a torpedo.
Oh
bat.
Yeah,
what
no,
the hell?
No. Keep,
I just all right, keep, great.
Keep running your finger down the list. It won't be far till you get to George Springer either. He's having a hell of a season. So it's
good
like
for George. I'm happy
it's
for
like
him.
A reunion of all. Like it's like the Astros 2017 World Series team and the 2022 team got together and had a hit making baby between those. And Bregman was on both of those. And Tucker and Springer were each on one. It's just the gods are teasing us right now. I mean, I feel fortunate, honestly, and I feel fortunate that they're 8-10 right now. If you're asking me my overall feeling with this team after losing another super boring game, their one run they scored happened in the first 5 minutes of the game. Altuve and Pena both get hard hit singles up the middle, and I'm like, okay, no Yordan in the lineup today, but this could be a fun little afternoon. And they were making things happen. They were making it shake on the base pass. Pena gets that hit. Altuve does that thing where you're like, no, don't run to third. He runs to third. He gets there. Pena slides into second. You got second and third. Nobody out. Game just started. People aren't even in their seats yet in the stadium. And then you're like normally Yordan would be coming up, and you'd be like, okay, well, this Paredes comes up and drives in a run with a ground ball. And then, of course, the next two guys, Christian Walker and Yiner Diaz, the two worst hitters on the team right now, come up and do nothing. And then the team proceeded to do nothing for another 13 straight hitters after that. Like, it's so. And Yordan not being in the lineup yesterday. Okay, this must have
been. Well, he got hit. He had an owie, right?
Did he get an owie? I mean, he hit a home run. He hit a home run in his last at bat the night before, 420 feet. And he's not in the lineup yesterday?
It was a very Kyle Tucker-like hit to the knee that he got,
Was it after he hit a home run? The last we saw him, he was trotting the beat. It had to be.
Sometimes that swelling pops up afterwards. And sometimes
he's a
DH! Ends up being a stress fracture that keeps you out for 10 weeks.
I get that. No, that I understand. He hit a home run in his last. By the way, hit a home run in his last at-bat. I would keep, even if this is a planned day off, I would go to him and say, hey, man, do you want to keep this thing going? Because that's what happens with Yordan. Usually, typically, when it rains, it pours. It has not poured yet this year. But he has a day off today. Like, it's April. You got to get 2 days off in April? What the hell?
You know, the other day when I just, lately I find more and more things that are just bothering me during broadcasts.
Yeah.
Various teams. Yesterday, it was Wilson Contreras, this extra L in his first name. I don't
He's got two L's.
Who the hell?
Yeah,
like he's Will Contreras because but with a son afterwards.
Mm-hmm. Anyway. That bothers you?
Yeah, that bothers me. That annoys me. You know their little flapping celebration.
That bothers me. Yeah.
The other day, and I don't fault Blum for this, and he didn't obviously mean to do this or not, but they were talking about the coach who had written a thesis in high school or college about how the Astros were going to win a World Series in 2017.
Yeah.
And that was pretty impressive to the Astros, and they hired him because of it. And Blum said, yeah, a guy writes a thesis on how to win a World Series. I'd say hire that man.
Yeah.
I thought, hey, that's Jeff Luhnow.
Yeah.
You could hire Jeff Luhnow.
He's out there. Yeah.
Have you seen what George Springer and Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman are doing?
Dude.
You know, got them.
Yeah. There was an article.
Well, not Springer, but still.
Hey, he knew exactly when to bring him up.
Yeah, there Luhnow you go. Did. There you go.
It was a little depressing. There was an article yesterday. It's funny with the teams right now, like the Rockets and the Texans, these articles come out about top 10 front offices, top 10 quarterbacks, best young nucleus, this and that. And the Rockets and the Texans are in that phase where I get excited to click on the articles. The Astros are in that phase right now where they're still, from where they were a couple years ago, definitively going downward from that. Now, maybe they plateau and they come back a little bit this year. They had an article in The Athletic, according to 40 anonymous executives, who are the top 10 front offices in baseball. And I'm thinking this is one of those articles that as recently as just a few years, and this is no disrespect to Dana Brown. Like, he's Dana Brown's, right, yeah. Dana Brown's done okay. It's just the team has leveled off. But I clicked it. That's an article I would have clicked like 5 years ago when Luno was here. And I would have been like, oh, yeah, let's give it all to me. They're going to be number one or number two. Seth and I are going to debate why they got disrespected and were only the third best front office in baseball. And now it's an article I click and I got to run my finger down all the way to 13th. They got like, you know, 6 fifth place votes. And that was the extent of the respect that they got. And that's where this team is right now. They've had me come in this morning and you as well. Far too many mornings early in the season. Not just miserable because they lost, but miserable because they lost in the most boring fashion possible.
Yeah, don't bore me. Out. That's the number one rule in life.
Out.
Don't be boring.
Right. Be memorable. Out.
That's a good. Yeah.
After out. After out. It's, ugh. God, it's brutal, man.
It's
brutal.
The curse of Jose. Well, it's really the, I would say it's the.
It's the Yuli curse. I know where you're going.
It's the curse of Yuli.
Yeah. The first base issue.
Gurriel.
Yeah.
Christian Walker. He's walking more than he was at the beginning of the season. Oh, so there you go.
Yippee.
8 walks in the last 7 games, Sean.
Yeah.
That doesn't get your juices flowing?
It's not.
That
I'm
doesn't
juiceless.
Do anything? That
I'm
doesn't raise that doesn't raise your eyebrows a little bit?
Nope.
Like, oh.
Nope. And I was thinking about this morning about Christian Walker because, yeah, the Chandler Rome has a good article about Christian Walker and what he's going through right now. To Christian Walker's credit, he's completely accountable for it. He's blaming nobody but himself.
As was Jose Abreu, remember.
Yeah. No, for sure. For sure. I have no history with him, with Christian
right.
Walker. You
yeah.
know, that's this slow start. You're making me mad because no history. Like, at least Jose Abreu we saw more frequently than we saw Christian Walker because he was in the American League. Christian Walker playing in Arizona the last few years might as well have been playing in Siberia. Like, I have no history with you. You need to start hitting better than 103 or whatever it is you are.
One of our most loyal listeners, Michael Beckman, tweeted at both you and I yesterday saying, hey, if this was Jose Abreu with this performance at first base, fans would be livid right now. And I'd say, I'd say fans are certainly not happy or pleased.
No.
But two, let's just, to lay it out, is just how bad Abreu was last year.
Yeah.
He was twice as bad as Christian Walker at this point.
Yeah.
He had Christian Walker has a 154 batting average. Abreu had an 0.85 batting average last year through 18 games.
And that's year two of Abreu. Like, we're 18 games in with Christian Walker. I know Michael's listening. He listens to every minute of the show. That's Apple. It's apples and oranges in so much as what were we the key analogy would be, what were we saying about Jose Abreu a month into his time as an Astro? And I would feel like the tone, like, I don't think people had given up on Jose Abreu. I think it was probably, if I had to go back and listen to our shows from
in the first year,
2 years ago. Yeah, 2023.
Yeah, ago,
like, that's
yeah.
the analogy is like, yeah, Christian Walker's been he hasn't even been here for a month yet. So, yeah, if it was Jose Abreu coming off of 2 years of sucking, that would mean he's still on the team, which we'd have been livid all of spring training that he's even still here. But I think a month in with Jose Abreu, we were still holding out hope that it would turn around. And I am still holding out hope for Christian Walker that it's turning around. The thing here is that they're batting Christian Walker cleanup every day. And unlike maybe the teams Jose Abreu was on 2 years ago, there ain't a whole lot of other good options than to let him. What who by merit deserves to get bumped up into the four hole right now? Yiner Diaz, Jeremy Pena.
If you look at the power, just they've got the fifth lowest OPS. They've got the fourth lowest slugging percentage.
They're all singles.
And a lot of their stats only look as good as they do because they had that 14 run performance versus the Angels.
Yes,
You look at the Yankees and you're like, well, sure, but they're only dominating everybody because of several huge performances.
Yeah.
No, that's not the same.
No.
You take that one game out and they're just abysmally bad. Day in and day out when you watch the Astros, if you didn't see that Angels game where they had 14 runs, it is what it is. Three or fewer runs in 13 of the 17 games that weren't that Angels
game. Yeah, that weren't that Angels game. That's the stat right there. It's not good. It's not good. And I hate that this is the tone that they set for us right out of the chute. But the thing is, a performance like yesterday is perfectly nap-inducing and putting us to sleep, and everybody else is still pretty much asleep right now. So this is an appropriate time to talk about the Astros. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. Off and running on a Thursday. We're a week out from the NFL draft. Yeah. The draft pundit that predicted the Will Anderson Jr. trade says with a lot of positivity, with a lot of force in his voice, the two names he thinks the Texans are drafting. We've got that for you coming up next. All right, good to be with you on a Thursday. The draft is a week out. A week from today is the NFL draft. Nick Caserio met with the media yesterday. We'll dig into some of what he had to say at the top of the hour. Nick met with the media, sat down for a good half hour or so with the assembled media. How comfortable are you with the number 25 pick? The contention that they don't draft, do not draft based on need. We'll hear from Nick Caserio on that at the top of the hour. We'll get to headlines in about 25 minutes or so. Daniel Jeremiah is, of course, former NFL scout. I think one of the more respected draft experts. And here in Houston, it hits home with Daniel Jeremiah pretty acutely, Seth. He was the draft pundit who, in his final version of his mock draft, the day before the 2023 draft, had the Texans selecting C.J. Stroud with the second overall pick. Ding, that was correct. And then trading up from 12 to 3 with the Arizona Cardinals for Will Anderson.
Yeah.
Amazing. He got that one correct, too.
And yeah. Daniel Jeremiah is a guy. He's a former scout for the Ravens, I believe, right?
Yes.
And he's plugged in. He talks to teams a lot. He works for the NFL Network. He's kind of got that. I think a lot of people in front offices trust him that he's not going to divulge stuff he's not supposed to divulge, and yet he has a lot of candid conversations and uses that to form his opinions. So I think that, in that instance, I would guess that he had some intel from either the Cardinals or the Texans on that one, because he did it. It was the day before the draft, I think.
Yeah, it was
one or 2 days before the draft.
It was literally the day before the draft. You're right.
Yeah. He's plugged in.
He's plugged in.
And he's not a hot take artist.
No.
He speaks pretty respectfully about people when he did all the time, pretty much. So
yeah. So here is Daniel Jeremiah yesterday. He was talking to Ryan Russillo and Todd McShay. So this had to be something to do with the Ringer, I would guess. Here's what he said about the Texans.
The Houston Texans, it's going to be the law firm of Booker or Banks. They're drafting an offensive lineman between those two guys, whoever's there.
Okay. I mean, declaring with authority that it's either Tyler Booker, the guard out of Alabama, who he's referring to there, and then that would be Kelvin Banks, the offensive lineman out of the University of Texas.
Not Kelvin James that I was calling him yesterday when
it's a cool name.
Talking
though.
About comedians, I was thinking about Kevin James.
Yeah.
So no, Kelvin Banks and Tyler Booker. So I don't think you'd be wasting your time if you do a little extra viewing of their highlight reels or whatever on YouTube during the next week or so, because I think an offensive lineman. Not a huge shock that Daniel Jeremiah would say that. It is given that yesterday Nick Caserio flat out adamantly said no, we don't. We're not going to – we draft best player available.
Yeah.
You know, nope, we just – that's – but he doesn't just even say offensive line. He says either Tyler Booker or Kelvin Banks if they're available there.
Well, and what makes that interesting is that's just somebody declaring what the Texans are going to do. When he had his prediction 2 years ago about Will Anderson and the trade up, it would be very easy to assume, especially that year when everybody had bad information on the Texans because nothing was getting out of the building – with what they were doing with the number 2 pick. And so it was easy to assume back then that he was getting all his information from the Cardinals on that trade, right? If the Texans are so locked down. And on the scale of NFL teams, the Texans skew very heavily towards the ones that I don't think put a lot of smoke out there. I feel like it's two people that know exactly what they're doing. It's Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans. That's an interesting one just because this is, there's no second team involved in this one. If he's getting intel, maybe it's just people he's talking to reading the tea leaves with workouts, or they talk to he talked to a team who happened to cozy up to Nick or D'Amico at the combine or something like that.
If I had to guess,
I would guess it's probably a pretty solid prediction where his intel is maybe secondhand. Possibly.
Right. Or the time they've spent. Yeah. Now with the Texans, I always caution against reading too much into, hey, they had these guys in on their top 30 visits or anything like that. Because a lot of times they're just trying to check off boxes. Guys that, they had one prospect in who from a smaller school that they just I think there's a chance they just hadn't been to those pro days where they go to the Texas pro day because there's so many prospects there.
Yeah.
So I don't read too much into that. I think that with Tyler Booker especially, well, and with Kelvin Banks, Nick has spoken pretty openly about how they like having lots of film on guys, especially if it's versus SEC teams and what have you. Mm-hmm. And both Tyler Booker and Kelvin Banks have performed at a high level for a long time.
Yes.
Where you take it with somebody like the offensive tackle, Josh Connerly out of Oregon, is a guy who started for 2 years and improved a lot this past season. But I think that I could see, even if you like some things about Josh Connerly better than Kelvin Banks, athletically or what have you, Kelvin Banks has just been doing it longer and been more consistently doing it against a higher level of competition.
Mm-hmm. Here's Tyler Booker. This is from the Combine itself, and he was talking about Will Anderson Jr., loving football, leadership. Of course, they were teammates at Alabama. Here's Tyler Booker, who a lot of people have – linked to the Texans in large part because of a vibe like this.
It would mean a lot to be on a team with Will Anderson. And as I mentioned my leadership earlier, I've learned a lot of my leadership skills from Will. Being around a guy like that who loves the game of football, that's something hard to pass up on. Like in the game of football, not everybody loves it. I'm a guy who loves it. I'm a guy who eats, sleeps, and breathes football. And not everybody does it. Some people play for the money. Some people play just because they're good at it. But I love the game of football. And Will is another person who truly loves the game of football just as much as I do.
Okay, I'm going to take that at face value that Tyler Booker is 100% genuine about that. He seems like a genuine kid. I think what amps up the likelihood on a Tyler Booker, Seth, is not only is that a position of need for this team just on Sundays, that's a personality of need the other 6 days of the week in that room. I think that's a reason why that room is torn. It's torn down and got a bunch of new faces in it is because they want people in that room that have an attitude like we just heard in those 28 seconds of audio right there.
Right. Well, and if you look at McMillan, the receiver, where there's questions about whether he even really enjoys watching football all that much, and some of the anonymous scout reports are, they had to beg this guy to stick around, and he kept negotiating his deal and all of these other things. It feels a whole lot more like a Tyler Booker or Ibuka, the receiver out of Ohio State, guys like that, Kelvin Banks, that might just appeal to him more. The really interesting thing about this is that Daniel Jeremiah has a pretty good bead on how teams are feeling about people. The fact that he brings up Kelvin Banks and knowing that the Texans have the 25th overall pick, it's interesting because Kelvin Banks is generally going around 15 or higher.
He's in the teens.
In mock drafts.
Yeah.
And now Jonathan Alexander, in his latest mock draft, had the Texans trading up to draft Kelvin Banks.
Mm-hmm.
So I was skeptical of that, but I wonder if maybe Jonathan Alexander, in reading the tea leaves too, really feels like the Texans really love Kelvin Banks and maybe are willing to trade up for him.
They've got 2 third-round picks, the 79th overall pick, which they got in the Laremy Tunsil trade, if I'm not mistaken. And that's been passed around by like 4 different teams. And then the 89th pick is their own. An interesting prop bet on this draft would be, do the Texans end up using 2 picks in the 3rd round of this draft to actually take players, or do they trade one of those picks?
Jonathan Alexander's trade was a 3rd-rounder this year.
Yeah.
They would trade a 3rd-rounder from this year and a 2nd-rounder from next year. They would get back a 3rd-rounder next year with, I can't remember which team it was. So, I'm going to say it was the Bucks.
Yeah, they were moving up. Yeah. So you do, you know, you do the balancing act here, and they're basically giving up next year's 2, more or less, to move up to go get Kelvin Banks. And that's who he had him taking, Kelvin Banks, you said, Seth?
Yep.
So the mock drafts, people laugh about the mock drafts, and we're going to do our mock draft injection at 7:45 today, and this will be the first one we've ever done like this. We're going to do John Harris's mock draft on footballtakeover.com. He did a 3-round mock the other night. So we're going to have him on while we critique his mock draft, or we'll go back and forth with him. He's going to hang for another segment after that and talk draft with us a week out from the draft later today.
Yeah, and so this is yesterday, Nick Caserio talking about, and I want to say, did Brendan Scott ask this question?
I don't remember.
Talking about how they do use some mock drafts to try to figure out and get a general gauge of where players might go.
I would just say, some are probably more relevant than others because some are getting the information from the teams. Like, they're not just making it up themselves. Like they're talking to teams saying, hey, you know, so that's how they're building it, right? So they're getting intel. I'd say agents are involved. Like they're getting intel. All right. So you try to, I would say you try to gather information, but you have to be careful about how much you actually put in the information. And then what can you trust and what can you rely on? And you're just trying to get yourself in the ballpark.
Yeah. It is funny. They used the mock draft. And Nick's told us that on this show before. There are mock drafts out there that they use. Nick also said in that press conference yesterday at one point about how much garbage there is out there right now.
Right, right. No, he opened up with it. Yeah. I talked about how much garbage there is out there. No, and that is the big part of it is that I think they look at guys like Daniel Jeremiah and a select few others that maybe they themselves have relationships with, and they know that teams talk to these guys.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever it's worth, in Daniel Jeremiah's latest mock draft, which I believe the last he hasn't done one in April, he had the Texans taking Kelvin Banks with the 25th pick overall.
Okay.
So Daniel Jeremiah might have, at that point at least, felt like, yeah, Kelvin Banks will fall further. Maybe other mock drafters are being a little bit more aggressive in their assessment of Kelvin Banks.
Is there a database somewhere that tells us which of these mockers are typically the most accurate with this stuff?
Usually the easiest way to find them is the guys that are bragging about where they
ranked. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. But it exists. Yeah.
It's the part though too is I think that the way that GMs and a lot of other people look at mock drafts is you try not to get too hung up on exactly which guy is going where. It's more, all right, are the guys that are being predicted to go in the top 15 generally going in the top 15? Are the guys that are predicted to go later in the first round generally going later in the first round? Because then you don't want to look at any of these as written in stone, but you get a good feel for what perhaps the general consensus is for most teams on where guys, how they stack their boards.
It feels like the top 10 is really starting to coalesce. You know, like it feel like Cam Ward's a lock. I feel like Travis Hunter is getting close to being a lock at going number 2. Abdul Carter won't get past New England at 4. And if New England doesn't get Abdul Carter at 4, they're probably taking Will Campbell. Mason Graham at 5, Ashton Jeanty at 6. Like I don't even have this in front of me right now. I've looked at so many of these damn things, and it's starting to fit. But maybe there's a curveball coming. Who knows?
And I'll tell you what. I have honestly been I have neglected edge rushers to an extreme degree. I've watched a lot of the defensive tackles just because I like defensive tackles. And the Texans, D'Amico wants a stud defensive tackle at some point. So I've neglected the edge rushers. Completely, almost, totally ignorant, or at least, you know, in comparison to where I'd like to be. Well, that might have to be my weekend project.
Is there a great one in this draft? Like, that's where the people that got that criticized the Texans heavily as to what they gave up for Will Anderson 2 years ago.
Yeah.
I think the Texans were they had a look at the next couple of years saying there ain't nobody else like this guy coming down the pipe either. Like the first defensive guy taken last year was Leiato Leitu at 15. You know?
Yeah, I mean Abdul Carter.
Abdul Carter, there you go. Yeah, Abdul Carter. Yeah, there you go. So that's one. But
and even like with defensive tackles, it feels like Mason Graham is the consensus stud, and there's a little bit. He's not J.J. Watt,
right,
you know. He's not a taller Aaron Donald. Yeah. Aaron Donald got docked mostly because of his height. But let's say Aaron Donald was 6'3" or 6'4". He's not that.
Yes.
So I think in a lot of other drafts, Mason Graham wouldn't be as slam dunk the top defensive tackle.
Text message: Jim Adler, the Texas Hammer text line. Got in the car a couple minutes ago. I've been hearing about Kelvin Banks for 5 minutes. Who is he?
Offensive tackle out of Texas.
Yeah.
Sorry, everybody.
Good player. Yeah.
Big. That's bad by me.
Yeah.
With Kelvin Banks, the big question is there is still a little bit where he doesn't move his feet as fluidly as, like, say, a guy like Laremy Tunsil.
Yeah.
There's times where if he's a train, the engine is blocking a guy, but his caboose is still stuck 2 steps behind. upper body gets ahead of his lower body a little bit. So that's why he might be available at 25. He's just not quite as fluid as a guy like Will Campbell or even, you know, Josh Connerly, who's been going lower than Kelvin Banks.
Yeah.
But I do like Kelvin Banks. I wouldn't like him as a top 5 pick, but at 25, I think that's that there's a lot to work with there. And he's been very consistent, and he's produced for a long time.
Would you be cool with Jonathan Alexander's proposed trade where you're essentially netting out giving up a second-round pick next year to move up a few spots to get him?
as I told Jonathan, I did a video the other day where I disagreed with a trade up, but I also told him, you know, I'm going to sit with this for 24 hours and I'll probably be A-okay with it.
And?
I'm A-okay with it.
Okay.
I'm not over that. As long as they don't give up their second round pick.
Yeah.
I don't part with that second round pick. That's all I don't want to leave.
They've got two of those next year. They got a two from the Tunsil next year, and they got a three from the Tunsil trade this year.
In that trade, they would lose that second round pick next year, but they still have a second round pick.
They still have their own. Yeah. Or at least one, depending on which one they give up. Yeah. All right, headlines coming up next. Another boring afternoon for the Astros. The NBA playoff picture is coming into focus. And Nico Yamaleava's got a new home and less money. We will get to that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, let's get to headlines. Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. The Astros lose yesterday afternoon 4-1 to the St. Louis Cardinals. So the trend continues. I got to go back and see if you got on this trend. If you just picked the Astros to just win one game, lose one game, win one game, lose one. It's all they've done all year since the sweep at the hands of the San Francisco Giants earlier this year. They lose 4-1 yesterday to the Cardinals. Where's our concern level on Ronel Blanco right now, Seth? Yesterday, 5 innings, 5 hits, 3 earned runs, and they all came on one swing of the bat from Lars Nootbaar, who still sounds like a made-up name on MLB 2K to me. It sounds
makes
like,
me hungry. It sounds like a delicious candy bar.
Really does.
Like nougat bar.
How does he not have the Nootbaar out there? Maybe he does. But 3 walks, 1 strikeout, and that was the big thing. Ronel Blanco, until the end of the 4th inning, he was all fly balls. Like, not even any ground balls or strikeouts, just everything.
But a lot of soft contact until they started giving up a lot of hard contact. Yeah, in the form of a home run. Even the line out on that and his final out in that inning was a hard hit line drive.
Yeah.
I'm trying with Blanco, but his transition to being a full time starter, it looked great at the first half of last season. It looked incredible. But it's just he's still a work in progress. So I'm. Did I say I'm fine with him? I'm not fine with him, but I'm trying to be patient with him.
He's the one out of this rotation right now that Framber and Hunter Brown, they're fine. And I know Framber sucked his last time out. Arrigetti, when he comes back, I'm actually very enthusiastic about Arrigetti when he's healthy.
Yeah.
Gusto is just a guy right now. Like, he's a young guy who's just in there because Arrigetti's out. Wisniewski so far, I think, has been better than I expected 3-4 starts into the year. Blanco is the one out of this group where I'm like, all right, how many more rehab starts does McCullers have till we see if maybe he can take Blanco's, whether either take Blanco's spot or be a 6th starter in the rotation to kind of give everybody an extra day of rest.
I'll tell you, you know the happiest person in the world should be that Paredes started off real slow. He's come along, but that Christian Walker has just been abysmal is Brendan Rodgers. Because I was talking to somebody yesterday who I don't think wants me to say their name on the radio, who was just irate about Brendan Rodgers. Like, why is he there? And I'm like, oh, I mean, it's not like he's making a bunch of money or anything. He was just, they were competing. And they're like, yeah, but why is he there? Give me Dubon. Give me a Altuve more often at second base, whatever it might be. The Christian Walker scenario, I'm not panicked about that. I think there's excuses you could make for Christian Walker right now that are valid. Just the layoff during spring training and how it might have screwed up his swing a little bit when he was trying to accelerate his schedule coming back in. He started walking more, at least. You look at Abreu this time last year. Through 18 games, Abreu had walked once.
Yeah.
And Abreu's batting average was .086 through 18 games.
Yeah.
Brendan Rodgers up at .160. Yahoo!
Yeah.
Yeah.
Christian Walker. None of it's good. Like, you look at their lineup and you look at the box score and you see all their averages for the season there, and it's like, the two guys that are hitting over .270 right now are Myers and Altuve, and their OPSs are not in line with somebody who's a super impactful player. So it's bad. I think they got a lot of professional hitters in the lineup. I think they're going to hit their way out of this, but it's just frustrating right now.
Because they're
getting good pitching. That's the thing.
Yeah.
You know, like they weren't getting good pitching this time last year. They're getting pitching that's good enough that if they just weren't scoring 3 runs or less in 80% of their games, in an AL that's super muddled right now. You know what I mean? Like they might have actually given themselves a little bit of early separation here if they could just hit average.
Yeah.
You know?
I guess from your question at the beginning, yeah. Blanco's been the guy that it's the biggest gap between what you hope is his ceiling and where you've seen him perform and where he is right now.
Yeah.
Wisniewski, we just don't know, and you're just hoping for the best.
Yep.
Arrigetic, we're bullish about as a young guy, but there's still a little bit of, okay, I just don't know about him. Blanco, it's frustrating because you've seen the really good version of Blanco,
yeah.
But you've also seen the downside.
Blanco's the one who's in jeopardy. Like if McCullers comes back and they go with a 5-man rotation, Blanco's headed to the bullpen out of all these guys. I don't think it's even because he's done it before for one thing. It's
3 weeks from now. Who's a starter, Gusto or Blanco?
Blanco. But if McCullers comes back, if you ask me who's a starter, McCullers or Blanco, then because I know Lance is going to start. He's going to start. I know that. It's just a question if they expand the rotation or does somebody get swapped out. And we're assuming that Arrigetti's coming back in that equation as well, right? When you ask 3 weeks.
Yeah,
from now.
Yeah, yeah. Arrigetti back. Yeah. I just I've got a soft spot in my heart for Gusto. Kid, he couldn't even make his start. Like he has a legitimate couldn't make the high school team story. Unlike Jordan's, where it's like. He wasn't varsity his freshman year. All right. Like, okay, give me a break, please.
Yeah.
Gusto flat out, like, his high school baseball coach didn't like him.
Yeah.
Now he's in the major
leagues. Now look at him. Where's that guy? Yeah. Where's that coach?
Yeah, where's that coach? I want him to name him in an article.
I do, too. The final play-in games are set for tonight. The most depressing night of basketball all year for me is the 9-10 games in the play-in. Like last night, we had Miami and Chicago, two teams that stink. And then the nightcap was Sacramento hosting Dallas. Sacramento, a team that traded their best player at the deadline against Dallas, a team that their fans don't even like.
Those games feel like when Notre Dame would have to go to the some minor league bowl game. The players, the fans, everybody are kind of like, all right, I guess we'll go to our bowl game.
Right, yeah.
Cool. Give me a nice gift bag.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
I've always wanted to play Oregon State in the Sun Bowl. That's been my dream.
That's what dreams are made of.
Dallas wins last night. The two road teams end up winning last night, Dallas and Miami.
Dallas.
And, yeah, that's the most interesting story. Out of the games tonight.
It's all working out, Sean.
Right.
It's all working out.
Defense wins championships.
If I were Nico there, the GM, I'd be like, huh? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. You guys were skeptical, were you not? Yeah.
So it'll be Dallas at Memphis in the late game, Miami at Atlanta in the early game, and for the right basically to get fed to Cleveland and OKC in the first round. Two teams
really
that won
Dallas
like 60 games. I do too.
I really want Dallas against a real team, yeah.
Yeah, look, let's keep it alive. Nico Iamaleava. God, I'm getting way too good at pronouncing his name.
It's smooth.
Thanks, man.
Yeah.
Appreciate
that. You're gonna miss not talking about him as he becomes irrelevant.
I will. Yeah. And he's going to UCLA. This is according to Colin Cowherd of all the Nugget. Colin Cowherd. I didn't know he had a breaking news element to him, but Cowherd was the one that reported yesterday. Nico Iamaleava picking UCLA. Now, there's also a contention that he left Tennessee, not because of the money. But because of the style of offense Tennessee was playing. And I think I find that very interesting that that's now the reason, given the fact that he's reportedly making significantly less money at UCLA than he would have made had he just stayed at Tennessee and not agitated for an extra $1.6 million. Now,
maybe it all works out. If he ends up setting records and becoming a first-round prospect
at
UCLA, you see, it was the long play.
Well, if he does become a first-round prospect, then it is a successful work out.
It's still going to be a mark against him, the fashion in which he did it.
I agree.
It's like leaving your wife while she's when she's going through chemo or something.
Yes,
you know, you're gonna get marked down for. All right, this is a dastardly way to do things.
Here's the part that makes no sense. If this late contention here that it was the Vols' style of offense not preparing him for the NFL, is that all the reports were he wanted $4 million? If he got $4 million, he'd still be at Tennessee. So what you're telling me is that an extra $1.6 million this coming season is worth. Torpedoing your chances of becoming an NFL quarterback.
Hey, if I'm the number one team picking in the draft, and you know, usually that's a team that's a bad situation to go to, then he'll be fine with it. You say his name.
Nico Iamaleava.
We'll be fine with it because he's a mercenary, and he'll be A-okay. Like, maybe. You're going to give me the most money? Sure, let's do it.
UCLA.
I'm not going to try to angle my way out of this number one overall pick.
The crazy thing about that is reportedly his brother backed out of a commitment from to UCLA at signing day last year to go to Arkansas. Like, to me, UCLA comes off looking the worst in all this. I'm like, oh. His brother just stiffed you last year on signing day. What are we doing?
You got no respect. None. UCLA, you're meant for the streets.
Yeah. Well, they have that coach. They have that coach that couldn't get two words spit out at the Big Ten media days last year.
Oh, that's
Deshaun
right,
Foster.
I forgot about that.
Super interesting to me. All of a sudden, I guess. All right. We got to go find that.
He clammed up. Completely, right?
Yeah. He's like, UCLA. You may not know us. We're in LA. So is USC. We got to find that audio. That was tremendous. All right, Nick Caserio. We heard from the Texans GM yesterday afternoon talking about the draft, his pre-draft press conference. How does he feel about where they're sitting right now at 25? And are we buying a contention that Nick Caserio made about their strategy in the draft? We will have that for you. We'll also compare him to the magnificent Gladstone at some point. Which GM would you rather have as your GM? Nick Caserio or the magical Gladstone? We'll do that coming up next.